Welcome to Prattle World. Not welcome to Examining X-Men 97. I am your co-host, the ever uncanny, the ever astonishing Spider-Dan, and I'm here with my co-host, the exceptional man with an X in his name, Max Byrne, to finally talk about the extremely long wait we've had to just go through a whole mess of life and horrible things to get to this point. Years, decades to get to this point when the show has finally come back. I'm extremely excited to talk about this. Max, how are you feeling?
I'm excited. These episodes were extraordinary, and I'm running out of X's. I'll have to shoehorn xylophone into there somehow. I mean, 27-year wait, I think, kind of evaporated in the space of the sort of hour and 20 minutes it took to watch these two episodes. It's what a well worth the wait, wasn't it? It was just... we'll talk about it, obviously, but...
We'll talk about it, yeah. But I'm with you, Max. Like, I'm not going to keep my powder dry. It's everything I wanted it to be. I do have a few little niggles, but again, they are the most minor of minor niggles of anything. So we talked about it last week, talked about our emotional history with, and you know, just entertainment history with the X-Men, the comics, the show itself. So this, I actually, like most of these shows and Marvel stuff, I have pretty low expectations for. I actually haven't even watched the last three kind of MCU things. And this, apparently on Rotten Tomatoes, is the highest rated MCU thing ever, or Disney Plus thing ever on Rotten Tomatoes. Like comes out of the gate 100% and stays there, I think. Again, I don't take much stock in Rotten Tomatoes and stuff, but, you know, I was here for it, and I was not disappointed in any stretch of the imagination. I had my friend come over, Dan Kietis. He came round and we put it on, and it was like reliving just the. I mean, let's talk about the intro. They kept the intro. They kept the music. Like,
brilliant, wasn't it? I mean, did you read that the interview with where they quoted Kevin Feige saying that was his condition of green lighting it? Was that they had to somehow get that original theme song? If they no longer had the rights, they had to somehow resecure them. Mm. But he wouldn't sign off on it being produced if they couldn't get the original theme. But it was the fact that it was literally straight out the gate. There was no sort of previously on X-Men or a prologue or anything like that. You were straight into that classic theme song and classic opening sequence, which was pretty much shot for shot exactly how it was, with the addition of a couple of extra members of the roster as well, wasn't it? So they extended it ever so slightly, but it was just, what a thrill to see it in high definition and a cleaned up sound. It's the same music, but just slightly modernized, bit of additional guitar wailing away in there. It was just, as soon as that was on, that was like, oh, let's go.
I'm back, I'm in, it was just like, I've not been this excited for like MCU content, if you count it as MCU or whatever, Disney Marvel
stuff.
Probably
not.
Since probably like Endgame, Infinity War, like I was saying last week, where I was like, you son of a bitch, you know, you sons of bitches, you did it. And they fucking did. And again, I love those little, from the intro from the first episode is different from the intro for the second episode as well, which I loved.
You get a third member, and you get
a couple of clips, very minor, very quick clips of previous adventures. Like, in the second episode, you see Asteroid M, which is the Sanctuary two-parter, I believe, in the show, the original show. And then you also get a snippet of the Dark Phoenix saga as well, which is referenced directly in the show as well. But yeah, we've got a lot to talk about, Max, and we don't have a lot of time. So we've talked about the intro, but let's talk about episode one, To Me, My X-Men. And that's what I felt like I was saying again. I was welcoming them back, and these were my X-Men. These were the X-Men I grew up on. So why don't you tell us a little bit about this episode?
All right, well, without going through the entire plot, I mean, it picks up a year or so since the events of the old series. I mean, a lot of people thought it would literally be like next day or following week, but I think it works well with that year-long gap, I think. because it helps to show that a new sort of status quo has been established. So Charles Xavier is perceived to be dead by the world. They're not privy to the fact that he was taken away by Lilandra to the Shi'ar world to be hopefully revived. Anyway, we haven't seen that yet, but I've got a feeling we'll be getting a glimpse into his ultimate fate as the series goes on. Mm-hmm. So in the events of that, there's a bit more of a sympathy towards mutant kind in the world in general.
There's a kind of a de-escalation of mutant hatred, I guess. And so there's kind of a more openness. And again, this was kind of playing into what we talked about last week, where, you know, it's kind of like a known secret that Charles is a mutant, even though he's not, but you know, he's an activist. So they're kind of like, it's wobbly territory. Like, you know, is he associated with the X-Men? Why are the X-Men always there when he turns up to places? You know, it's kind of hand wavy, but I don't particularly mind. It's a very small niggle I have, but the kind of opposite of what Magneto was in that episode in Graduation Day, Magneto thought was going to happen was that the mutants were going to rise up, he was going to lead them, and they were going to kind of take over. Instead, the kind of opposite happens, where actually I think Gyrick says they're in vogue at the moment, which I thought was an interesting choice of words. That they were popular, they were tweetable, or I don't know what the term is now, to be hip and cool and stuff. That was kind of an interesting thing, that the sympathy had come from due to his death and the revelation that he was a mutant as well, and so much so that the UN directly are working with the X-Men.
Yeah, they're like legally authorized now, aren't they? They're not like sort of working outside the boundaries of the law and the established government. They're actually working with it's like when the A-Team were found innocent and ended up working for the US government in the last season or so of the A-Team. It's a bizarre comparison, but it's kind of like that, where they've spent their whole existence being shunned and being on the periphery of society, and now they're front and center. Exactly. But I think it works. I think it works okay. I think it works well to show. It shows, again, I don't like to say death because he isn't dead, but it shows that the world thinks his death wasn't in vain. You know.
We say he's not dead, but the X-Men are treating it as a death as well. Like Magneto's treating it as a death. The X-Men themselves are treating it as a death, even though we know kind of it's not. But I don't know if maybe that's going to be a big reveal, like we said, towards the end. Maybe he's going to come back in some form, you know, with Lilandra.
I think they're working on the proviso they're never going to see him again, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it works, though. I think because effectively they don't know. They have no contact with Lilandra. He could be dead. He could, you know, she's the Majestrix of the Shi'ar Empire. Why the fuck would she just come back and go, oh, by the way, the guy died? Sorry. See, in a bit, you know.
Laters.
Yeah, exactly. She's you know, she's speaking to the Kree, the Skrull. She's, you know, trying to negotiate peace in the galaxy, you know, these, you know, avian bird people. You know, if it did happen, you know, they're light years away, you know, it's fine for me. I don't mind that they're treating it as a death, because, you know, effectively he is.
Yeah, I guess it works for the context, doesn't it? And then we see, obviously, the team have evolved a bit since we last saw them. They've got a new member. Obviously, Bishop's joined, hasn't he? He's now an active member of the roster. And the biggest sort of change in the situation is the fact that Jean Grey is with child, heavily so.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's one of the things I think they had to have a kind of... I'm glad that it wasn't a next day continuation, because that's a lot of story and character and development to do within less than 24 hours. So I'm glad they gave it a little bit of breathing room, but still had their kind of moments, you know, there. Bishop, and he doesn't have his time displacement band on, which is interesting, because Beast is tinkering with it. So what is keeping him from, you know, going back in time? Because that's the device that kept him in the past, but he doesn't seem to need it anymore. So I wonder if we'll get an episode that is kind of explaining, and he references in the second episode that he's seen quite a few different timelines, so he's traveled a few times. So that kind of indicates that maybe something's gone wrong with the timeline, or maybe he's become unstuck in time or something, I'm not sure, tethered to one reality. Who knows?
Yeah, I hope they do explain it though, because it, you know, he's just there, isn't he? There's no, there's no. And by the way, this happened over the course of the last 12 months.
True. Yeah,
he's joined the team. So I do hope they kind of fill in the blanks in one of the episodes. Maybe, you know, like a flashback episode. I mean, there is a, I think episode, without jumping ahead too much, episode 5 is called "Remember It." So maybe there'll be, you know, something along that line will explain, you know, has he come from a, you know, a different future, or is, why is he there? So I do hope we get that. It would it would be a good episode, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I'd be up for that. I'd love to see where he comes from. Before we get too far into it, I did want to correct myself from last week. I made a few errors that I'd like to kind of alleviate. One of them is Bishop, because I didn't note down who had replaced him, the actor. So it is Isaac Robinson-Smith has replaced Philip Akin as the voice of Bishop. So that was one correction I had to make. Also, my rewatch, I've realized, I mentioned that there was a continuity error with Rogue not knowing Mystique. So in Days of Future Past, she reveals Rogue has never seen her blue form, her original form. She's only known her as her adopted mother, and she becomes her adopted mother, and she goes, "Oh my God, you were my mum all along." And then she helps her escape because of that. And then, as we were talking about, Senator Kelly actually becomes the president in the second season, in the first episode. So I didn't think he'd become president by that time. But again, even though I've watched this a million times, Max, I'm still forgetting parts of it. So that's part of my rewatch. But those are all my corrections. Everything else I said was exactly right. I didn't get anything else wrong.
Well, you got a high percentage rate then, haven't you? You know,
yeah, pretty good. I'm an expert, if you will. Did you enjoy kind of like this? It's interesting because they're throwing a lot at us in this episode, but I kind of like that. It's like if you've never seen an X-Men episode or that first season, you kind of get almost a greatest hits. Like, you got the Sentinels, you've got Gyrick, you got Bolivar Trask, you've got all of that those elements while still kind of carrying on what was left over of Graduation Day. There's even quotes, like direct quotes or references to those earlier episodes. The whole Cyclops going, "I surrender, not," is the reference to those first two episodes, Night of the Sentinels. There's a reference, a couple of references Magneto makes in the second episode that references to his first episodes, like when he talks about magnetism and electricity being related or being intimately linked, I think he says something like that. Mm-hmm. And then he also says "never again," which is again a quote from one of those two early episodes that he makes his debut in. So I'm an eagle eye as well. I've got an eagle eye, Max, because I spotted on Beast's shelf, there is a copy of Animal Farm. When Magneto breaks into Beast and tries to Beast's prison and tries to free him, he is reading Animal Farm. So that's another very deep cut thing I noticed.
I was going to say, did you notice one of the books on the shelf is also written by Julia Lewald as well?
Ah, I didn't see that. You were looking. I also noticed that the outfit that Rogue wears, the purple one, when she's in the nightclub, is the same outfit she's wearing in the mall in the first episode.
Ah, well, she's getting her money's worth then, isn't she, over 5 years?
Yeah, or 30, however you want to see it.
I guess Charles didn't leave her any of his fortune in the will.
No.
Just can afford new clothes.
before we upset anybody, we are going into massive spoilers. Probably already have already, but so if you don't want any spoilers, go watch the show. Highly recommend it. Big fans here, big fans. But we will be going into spoilers and potentially speculation what may come down the line as well. Anyway, carry on, Max. I've rudely interrupted with all that trivia.
No, it's fine. I mean, you were saying, like, you know, they're throwing a lot at us. I'm all for that. I think in this opening episode, you've got to go big. You've got to set your stall out. You don't want it to be a slow burning episode that, you know, you get like a prologue episode. You've only got one chance to make a first impression, as the old saying goes. So you've got to throw everything at it, because a lot of people, aren't coming to this show as, you know, maybe fans of the original. These are people who are, this is like their entry point, isn't it? So I think they do well with that opening scene, actually, because they fill in the gaps, don't they? There's like that kind of voiceover thing where it explains Charles has died and it explains what the new situation is in the world. So I think even if you've never watched a single episode of the original series, but you do have a vague working knowledge of the X-Men, be it through the live action films or you read the comics, you can jump on here and be straight into it, I think. I don't it's full of, like you've just said there, you've eloquently pulled out all the examples. It's full of fan service to the original series, but it isn't being exclusive with it, is it? It's entire, you can literally jump on. I could show this to anyone who's never bothered with it before and they wouldn't be lost going, who's that? Who's that? What's all this about? You can just watch it and it's fully explained to you. So I think that's really clever. They have it working on both levels for the old fans to give them stuff to pick up on and go, oh yes, I know that, I know that. And then, you know, you can walk into it completely cold and still get everything out of it. I think that's the beauty of the writing. You know, full credit to Bo DiMaio, you know, who, for reasons yet to be revealed, is no longer part of this organization.
Yeah. Yeah,
I guess that's a discussion for another day, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, I've read some things why he's been let go. I think it's Winderbauer, or the head of kind of the Marvel kind of Disney kind of film and development team. He's like the major producer, I think. He said it wasn't a firing, it was a parting of ways. And again, there's not much more information on that. But there are some other details about his life that I don't know if that played a factor or not in the parting of ways. But again, who knows? But again, that's speculation as well.
It is, isn't it? It's all tittle-tattle. But I think it's no reflect. What we can say, it's no reflection on the quality of his work.
Yes.
The quality of his work is, you know, front and center here, what we're talking about right now. It's absolutely bloody great. You know, what he was doing outside of his day job, who knows? And that's, you know, that's, again, that's all speculation, but that's a line's been drawn under that anyway, I feel, and they're moving forward without him for whatever reason. So
absolutely. You
know, fair play. But yeah, you can't take away from a masterful job he's done with the writing of both of these first two episodes. His name's on both of them, and they're
A master mold job.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Masterfully molded this show.
He has masterfully molded, hasn't he? Yeah. But, you know, you're talking about callbacks and, you know, getting to go and visit back to Guy Rick as well. Fabulous scene, isn't it? Where they go and visit him, and he's like this, not Hannibal Lecter kind of character, but like, you know, you get this sense of who, again, if you've never seen it, you get the full sense of what a dangerous individual he is. You know, I like the fact that he got his comeuppance and he's doing 25 years now in prison. You know, he got exactly what he deserved for what he did in the original series. But the sheer malevolence and menace of the character is so well written, isn't it? You know, even though he's just a man sat in a prison interview room with, you know, nothing to threaten them with.
Very insidious, I think, yeah.
He is, isn't he? And he comes out with that wonderful line about, you know, like you said, about how mutants are now treated with a fairer shake. And he comes out with that great line, which is a bit of foreshadowing as well. He comes out with tolerance. We tolerate you, but tolerance is extinction, which is the title of the final three parts of this season. So I'm very intrigued to see if he's going to play a bigger part. You know, if perhaps he's not going to be remaining in that prison cell for the rest of the season. You know, I'm really intrigued to see
I've got some speculation for later that I might have an idea of how they're going to play that. So, I like that they went back to the original design as well. We didn't have the completely unrecognizable Guy Rick from Graduation Day. It was like the way that Guy Rick looks in the comic, the way he did in episode one, like that's the design. That is the way he should look. So I like that. And yeah, there was, you know, some, like, like what we were talking about last week, I hope they keep it political. I hope they embrace the kind of, again, what the show was, what it was trying to say, the kind of things, the kind of very, you know, interesting things it's trying to say about the world, the allegories for prejudice and everything. I think they nailed that. And I think some of the dialogue in this episode and the next episode, especially some of the speeches from Magneto, so I'm sure we'll get into, I think are like, they're like as topical as you can fucking get right now. Some of the dialogue, I think, is like, in the world we have and everything that's going on in the world, I think some of that is And again, some of the Friends of Humanity's dialogue, like Executioner, who we see again voiced by the original Cable, comes back in this character, and some of his dialogue, I was like, oh fucking hell, I've heard this. I've heard people talk like this about groups of people, and it makes your skin crawl or your spine shiver a little bit. That, you know, again, these are comic book villains, but really they're reflecting the world we live in.
It feels like the world, but done in a heightened reality people with superpowers, doesn't it? It doesn't feel. It's certainly not a G. Willikers kind of cartoon animated show.
It's not Spider-Man and his amazing friends, definitely.
No. Much as I love that, as I said in episode one, but like we did say in episode one, we were saying we wanted it to still have that kind of feel like the original, where it was, you know, it wasn't afraid to tackle real life issues and reflect the ills of the world that we do live in. So I'm really glad they went down that route, to be honest with you. It feels consistent, doesn't it? It gives you that gives that consistency to what we've had before, rather than, you know, completely fresh tack. So fair play. I think the writing and the dialogue is as good as you'll find anywhere in any art form. I think it's superb.
I want to talk about the two MVPs of this episode, which I think are long overdue for some really good action sequences, character moments. We've got to talk about Cyclops and Storm. Again, team leaders, and given the absolute kind of, you know, the credit they deserve. We talked about how you like Cyclops. I really like Cyclops. And I think this, and loads of people are coming out of the woodwork going, oh yeah, I like Cyclops now. He's really good, isn't he? He's really cool. Look at how he uses his powers.
Of course you do.
Bet you fucking do, mate. Yeah. Which is fine. You can do that. You know, I do think it's one of the better interpretations of Cyclops, you know, outside of the comics, and best written. He's fun. He's using his powers in unique and interesting ways. He's charming. He's a little bit edgy. You know, he's not Charles Xavier. He makes it very clear he's not Charles Xavier. He's not, you know, a softy or, you know, this peaceful, you know, guy. He's like, if you're looking for a fight, you're going to get one. I'm not going to be that. And you know, he talks about some relatively dodgy territory, like when he starts talking about like invading Magneto's mind every minute of every day. I was like, there's a lot of comics out there where Scott does go into Magneto territory, becomes proto-Magneto. You know, Magneto was right, and then Cyclops was right became a big phrase just after Avengers versus X-Men. So there is that dark side to Cyclops, which I enjoy them playing with, but also there's the fun, caring, and, you know, that staunch defender of this dream, and that's what they talk about, the dream of Xavier and protecting that. And he takes it that seriously, and everyone's like, chill out, mate. We're making some beignets, and we're having a baby. Chill out a bit, you know?
Yeah, but, I mean, you're talking about the action. It's probably the most badass landing I've ever seen in my life. When they have to free fall, essentially, after the jet gets destroyed by the Sentinels, and everyone else who can fly flies, and everyone who can fly grabs onto a non-flyer and holds them and what have you, like Morph changes into Archangel and saves one of them. I can't remember if he grabs Wolverine or who he grabs. Yeah. But then Cyclops just goes, ah, fuck, I don't need that. And literally breaks his own fall by firing his optic blasts into the ground on full bore. So with so much force that it literally stops his ascent, and then instead of just like landing in a crater, he does this amazing, like the prototypical like superhero landing, and then just without breaking a sweat, just goes, to me, my X-Men, and they all swarm behind him. It's the most badass thing I've ever seen.
Oh, it's so cool. Because he gets pulled out of the plane by a Sentinel, he cuts the Sentinel in half, and then you think he's going to go into the jet engine, but then he falls away, and then everyone else is being looked after and taken care of, and he's still falling and falling for some time, and then all of a sudden he gives this like wry smile. He's like, great work, team, here we go, and then just absolutely like Marvel versus Capcom unleashes that like mega beam of octet blast into the ground, which I think is a really nice callback to the character. If you know anything about Cyclops, when he was a child, his parents were abducted by aliens from a burning plane that was going to go down. He was thrown out with his brother Alex, who becomes Havoc.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way down, his mutant powers activate, so his optic blasts start working. So he tries to slow the descent, but obviously this is like in the middle of this, you know, burning, you know, plane escape. And he manages to slow them a little bit, and Alex is unharmed, but Scott gets brain damage, and that's why he can't control his optic blasts.
Yeah, that's why he's got permanently got switched to on, isn't it?
Has to have the visor, and the person who found him and kind of brought him into the orphanage and kept him separate from Alex and gave him the ruby quartz glasses was Mr. Sinister. So, which is some deep, deep comic book lore there for you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I thought that was a cool little callback to the comics as well, which there are many in just in these two episodes, huge callbacks to the show and the comics. And they're really sticking to kind of like, obviously there's a 90s aesthetic to it, but yeah, they are sticking more so, I would say, to the 80s Claremont stuff, more so than any other kind of X-Men run or storyline. It's very 80s focused. If you know the stories they're pulling from.
Yeah. Well, they're definitely going 80s with Gambit's hair in this. Jesus Christ. That is a mullet and a half. I've never seen the likes of it, you know. Cooking beignets and growing mullets is on his repertoire.
Absolutely.
But it is great what they're doing. And you're talking about the action and the action sequence there where they take on these half a dozen sentinels. The action in this is a cut above anything we got in the original.
Oh, absolutely.
It's going to be, isn't it, with the advancements in animation technology and a bigger budget and all the rest of it. But this action sequence is absolutely amazing, you know, to see the team ups involved and everyone using the powers, everyone getting a moment to shine. Yeah. And that wonderful moment we got in the teaser as well, where Gambit powers up Wolverine's claws as well to go through the Sentinel. Mm. It's just a wonderful, wonderful action sequence that just hits all the right beats, doesn't it?
And again, I think loads of people, again, they're sharing the same moments over and over again. And the one I'd say I've seen shared the most is, you know, give them the forecast.
Yes.
Storm. It's like everyone's come in, everyone's fighting, and everyone's there. And and then they're like, you know, Master Mold's there, and you're like, all the zombie sentinels arise from the dead, arise from their graves, which I fucking love as well. And they say, give her the forecast. And Storm comes in, and they're like, Omega level threat detected. And she's just like, absolute, like, peak, you know, Storm here. Like, again, if you're not aware, I think I mentioned it in the last episode, but an Omega level mutant is someone who could end all life on Earth if they so chose to, or lost control. Magneto is one, Iceman is one, Storm is one. Yeah. And they really, like, they really go into this, and they really full, you know, bring it full force. You're the mistress of the elements, you know, all that sort of stuff is wonderful. And she creates this huge, like, I don't know, sandstorm, glass storm,
which is
wonderfully powerful and precise. Yet, you know, she doesn't harm any of her teammates while destroying all these sentinels, which just goes to show the absolute kind of control and mastery she has of her own abilities and herself. Wonderful.
It's a brilliant showcase, which makes what happens to her in episode two all the more like, wow, you know. My God, you know, that is such a, like, a huge shift for the character. I don't know if you want to talk about that yet or when we get to episode
we'll get there.
But it's a real moment, that, for sure.
I wanted to ask about a new character that's been introduced, one of the new mutants, Roberto DaCosta, who is Sunspot. And his journey is really interesting because it mirrors Jubilee's from the first episode, or the first two episodes. He comes in. Jubilee had a talk with Storm at the top of the mansion about it. Jubilee had a talk with Sunspot at the top of the mansion about it, and, you know, whether he should be or shouldn't be. And he's a really interesting character because he's a bit of a kind of a playboy. He's a rich boy. He's more interested in having a good time and paying money to get out of situations. He's trying to pay off the Friends of Humanity, and he doesn't want to use his powers. It's really interesting because they're doing it as, like, he's a closeted mutant, which I really like what they're playing with there, because his parents don't know. They're unaware. So I really like that he doesn't join. He doesn't join the X-Men, but he does leave a card with Jubilee. And it's implied that they have a kind of a romantic connection as well. But I thought he was a really cool addition, really interesting addition. And what they're doing with him, I think, is quite topical, I guess, and quite current as well. Like, again, there are mutants out there that don't want to be part of the X-Men, believe it or not. They just want to live their lives or go about what they're doing or do what they love. You know, like Dazzler, for example, she's more into making music and stuff. She doesn't necessarily have to be an X-Man, but she'll help out if needs be, you know. So I quite like that. I'm sure we'll get more of him throughout the show, but I thought he was a really cool addition.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's one of those, he's got no reason to want that life, is he? Because he's already got a great life. Like like he says when he first introduced, he's heir to the DaCosta fortune. He's got a great life. You know, he's got status, he's got wealth.
Privilege.
He's got everything. It's privilege. He's got everything a boy could want. His mutation doesn't alter his appearance, so he can just live normal.
I mean,
you know,
it does when he transforms and uses his powers, but again, he has control
in his actual life.
Yeah.
But in his actual sort of just not using it, he just looks like a regular.
Yeah, he's not Nightcrawler or Beast or anything like that.
Exactly. So he doesn't need to stand out. So there's nothing about his life he wants to change. So he's kind of, you know, reluctantly drawn into it. But like you say, he's definitely going to come back. You know, he's probably going to be the character with the biggest through line in it because he'll go from this. You see, he's like a callow youth. He bends them off to go to this. The world, what looks like the world's shittest rave that he goes to.
It was pretty shit.
And he's essentially dancing by himself with glow sticks as well when they bust in there to try and make sure he's okay. He's literally like, you know, he's this rich boy, you know, handsome, popular, and he's there in this rave dancing on his own.
I like that though, because even though he does have this privileged life and this existence. Yeah. He is shallow and he doesn't have somebody to relate to or to bond with because nobody knows what he's experiencing. So his reality is throw money at people, make friends through money, like, oh, I can buy you this and we can do this. But he doesn't really have true friendships. And I think that's what the X-Men are there to kind of show him and to teach him is that, you know, we do have things in common. You know, we have more things in common than we have that are different. And that's interesting. Again, I really love what they're playing with. Again, the comic book version, I think I remember him being quite aggressive and quite angry all the time as well. I don't think his dad particularly liked him being a mutant in the comic either and was quite and shunned him as well. I like the way they've gone with the character. I think his journey will be very interesting to see where he goes.
Yeah, it's going to be that transformative character arc from being, like I said, being that callow youth. And he'll step up towards the end and engage in heroic acts and what have you, and probably do something incredibly selfless for the benefit of others. So, yeah, you'll get that big transition, I think. So, yeah, I look forward to seeing where they go with him. They're keeping it under wraps for now. You know, he doesn't. I don't remember him being in the second episode, unless my mind's playing tricks on me.
No, he wasn't. No, because he left at the end of the first one. But yeah. I imagine he will be back. He will be back in some form.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah. So I look forward to seeing what they do with him. Yeah, he's going to be a good addition, I think, as an avatar for the audience. Yeah.
Yeah, again, audience cast. Surrogate. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, again, like you said, there's people coming into this show that have never seen it. They've never seen the original X-Men show. So I think they did quite a good job of just kind of cherry picking and getting the right kind of character beats and moments, which I really enjoyed. I did really like the interaction between Jean and Storm because in the original show, unfortunately, you very rarely got a scene that would pass the Bechdel test. And this one is kind of, well, I don't think it passes anyway, but it's two women who really love each other and care about each other, talking about their fears and worries and motherhood. And in the comics, they were like best friends, like, you know, they would die for each other. And I don't think we really got a sense of that in the original show. So I really liked that scene. I think that came in the second episode, I'll be honest, but that was one of the kind of character beats. I was like, oh, this is really good. This is really powerful. And at the end we get a good old cliffhanger as X-Men used to do very well. Magneto breaks in and everyone's like, because again, like, it's quite interesting because Jean is trying to get Scott away from the X-Men. Again, she wants to kind of live, you know, Wolverine's quite sad that they're moving away and want to abandon this and not be part of the X-Men anymore. And Jubilee's concerned because they were the original X-Men, who leads them afterwards. But yeah, she seems very keen to have a break or to get away or to pull Scott away from his duty or his responsibilities, which I think is very interesting come to the end of the second episode, which again, we'll talk about. But we get Magneto arrive, looking probably the sexiest Magneto has ever looked, I believe. A lot of people are, you know, again, I'm not into men, but there's something about him in this. And again, coming into the second episode, yeah, there's something very, a lot of people are feeling the thirst, let's say, for Magneto, I think, in this particular show. But he does look well for a man pushing, I don't know, 80, 90.
It's set in the 90s, isn't it? So this is 97, so it's like 50 years, just over 50 years after the end of World War II.
Yeah.
So I guess he'd be like, it depends what age they're pitching him during the events of World War II. So he'd probably be like 60-something in the context of this show. But
it does look good. Now, in the comics, there's various kind of storylines with characters that are like World War II age. And what they usually do is they have them swap bodies or they're rejuvenated in some form. Like Xavier had a brood impregnate his mind, so it had to be taken out and put in a cloned body. And like Baron Zemo had something similar, and the Red Skull has changed bodies so many times. So they tend to do that just so they go, but he's supposed to be old. When Joseph came along, who was supposedly a younger Magneto without any memory of being Magneto, which I'll talk about a little bit in a while. But that's usually how they kind of get around that sort of shit. I think he looks great, and nobody's read the last will and testament of Charles Xavier all these months. Yeah. Why?
He's been dead a year. Usually you get a will reading pretty sharpish after the death, so you can establish what you're actually going to do with whatever they have to leave behind.
Yeah.
But he's there reading it, which is I've never read such a, it's like a massive Encyclopedia Britannica he's got. Usually, you know, I've not been to any will readings, but I've seen enough to know it's not usually like that. But he's just sat there and he goes,
hell of a binding.
Yeah, he's like, you didn't read Charles's last will, did you? And they're all stood there thinking, oh shit, no, we didn't. No, we just assumed that the school would just, we'd just run the school in his absence and you know, life goes on, so to speak. But I suppose it's quite of a rug pull moment, isn't it, where they announce that, you know, he's left it all to his old pal Eric.
Magneto. Everyone wants to get ownership of the X-Men at the moment. They're like, this is my X-Men. No, it's my X-Men. So that's quite interesting as well. He reveals that he gets it all. He owns everything. And that kind of leads us into the following episode, I'd say. Mutant Liberation Begins once again. And again, before we talk about this next episode, I love that they kept the outro, the original outro as well, like the kind of, you know, the spiraling action figure, like this is what their powers do. This is the kind of fact
Very
file.
Cool.
Yeah, I like that because that was like the original kind of outro. There was another outro they made, which was just clips, which I didn't like as much. I like the kind of CGI animation and them spinning and telling you what they can do. I was just like, again, over the moon. We open with the next episode, and Magneto is going around saving human lives. It's being documented by news people. He's in a new outfit. Which has got a big M on it. I wonder what that stands for.
Subtlety, isn't it? You know, very very subtle man, isn't he? Yeah.
Maybe it's mutant. Maybe it's like Bishop's tattoo. Stands for mutant, maybe. Yeah. But he's going around, and Valerie Cooper is very unhappy. Now, Valerie Cooper was in the first episode and voiced by the original Jean Grey from the show. And she's a very interesting... I like what they're doing with her. She's a very interesting character. And I feel
there's more than meets the eye there, isn't there?
Definitely. And I feel what she gets upset because Magneto comes and takes over is that now the X-Men are less malleable, less available for manipulation. Because I think she's doing something. Because they say, "Oh, didn't you destroy all the Sentinel tech?" And they're like, "Yeah, well, of course we have. Well, why are the Friends of Humanity got Sentinel tech?" And they're like, "Well, it must be somebody else. It's definitely not us, the UN. Why would we do such a thing?" You know, and I'm like,
Yeah, exactly. Meanwhile, here's our hidden bunker somewhere with it all laid out and being reverse engineered and all the rest of it. Yeah.
Well,
they build her character as some. When I was reading the official like characters, they were saying she's someone who serves her own agenda. So, I mean, you know. There's going to be
extinction agenda, maybe.
Exactly. She's not the altruistic woman she appears to be, you know, when she's there, you know, on the treadmill. Hi, guys. You know, having the conference call and all this. And then turning up to help. I think
there's a little bit of
shade of grey there.
Yeah, there's definitely that kind of toxic work friend environment. Like, I'm your boss, I'm your manager, but I'm actually your friend, but actually I'll stab you in the fucking back if you do something, make something bad, you know, you're fired or you're on a disciplinary or some shit. I view her like that. So, you know, she's all smiles and, you know, all being friendly, but actually there's something else behind the eyes. I was going to say, again, this is a bit of speculation, but in the original comic, she was, again, I said this last week, she was kind of the, I don't know what the term is. I can't remember what I used last week, but kind of the government's kind of go between the mutants and superpowered kind of beings. I think they call it something in this, but yeah, she's kind of the advisor or kind of, you know, the middleman, I guess, so to speak.
The liaison or something like that.
Yeah, we'll say liaison, I think, or advisor on mutant affairs. In the comics, she, again, I said this last week, that she made the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants into the Freedom Force unsuccessfully because they were... But what's really interesting about that is they were hunting down the X-Men because they were technically outlaws, even though they were like the bad guys, which is, I thought, was a fantastic little twist on things. And they were fighting X-Factor and stuff. Like, Mystique was leading, Blob was in there, Pyro, Avalanche, all of them. And then eventually she said, "I'm going to try this again." But she got former X-Men and put them together in X-Factor, which was like Peter David's run in the 90s. And during that time, they found out that she was secretly conspiring on a project called Project Wide Awake, which was them secretly constructing and building Sentinel weaponry to control or to have a backup plan. You know, like Batman has his backup plans against the Justice League. That was there.
Yeah, if that day ever comes,
Yeah, that sort of thing. So I think that may be where, again, bit of speculation, but that may be where we're going with her character and her agenda, as we've talked about. So Magneto reveals that he's not being a villain. He's not like, "This is all mine to do with what I want." He actually has been inspired by Charles Xavier dying and the peace. The temporary peace that he's been able to instill on the earth between human mutant relations. And he wants to follow that dream. He's trying to be a better person. He's trying to be a better man and to live up, even though he deep down, he still feels the same way. He's attempting, he's trying, he's making the effort to be better.
He is, and he's making a bloody good fist of it, to be fair. I mean, you know, he's trying to lead them, trying to show them to do the right thing. Like you said, there's that wonderful scene where he saves everybody on that Ferris wheel right at the start as well, which is really, really cool sequence, actually. And he appears to be pointing them in the right direction as well. He's not really seemed to be serving his own agenda. Whether that's going to be the case throughout, you know, he's a character who flip-flops, so maybe, you know, it's not going to be all this way. Maybe there's maybe he's got a bigger plan that lies that we're not privy to.
Sure.
But certainly on the face of it, at least what we've been exposed to, he does seem to be quite, you know, philanthropic, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
And also having a little bit of intimate time with Rogue as well, sort of in his study, isn't he? You know, he's immune to her touch, shall we say, as well, due to his his magnetism sort of diluting her power so he can touch her.
I mean, a very like intense level, he can literally control your blood flow. You know, he can control the iron in your blood.
Yeah,
like not quite as he's overpowered in the comics and in the show, unlike the Ian McKellen version where they have to inject more iron into the blood for it to work. So there are moments in the comic. I remember one called Fatal Attractions, which is where Magneto pulls Wolverine's adamantium out of his skeleton. And almost dies because of it. He is able to freeze the entire X-Men, but Bishop is absorbing all the energy while that happens, and then it eventually like erupts with all of his energy. That's something. Now, a lot of people seem to be surprised by this, but I'm like, this is old as day to me. Like in the late 80s, one of the first graphic novels I ever got had Madripoor Nights, which is a crossover between Captain America, Black Widow. It's got a very famous Jim Lee cover. It's a gorgeous, really fun book. And it had a few other kind of additional stories. And those were Rogue fighting. So basically the twisted psyche of Ms. Marvel or Carol Danvers escaped her mind and became this kind of evil zombie character, which we did see kind of in Rogue's Tale, that version of her.
Yeah.
And she kind of had a physical manifestation, but it caused her to lose her powers and she ended up in the Savage Land. I can't remember exactly how it happens, but Magneto has a citadel in the Savage Land, which is referred to in the original show. When they go there, he's like, oh, it's called the Savage Land, Charles. Let me tell you all about it, all the mutates I made. And they go there and she doesn't have her powers and she's trying to survive. And she's got that kind of ripped up X-Men bikini you see a lot of cosplayers wearing and like a spear and stuff. And it's there where they have a relationship and Kazar gets involved and Nick Fury becomes involved. But they have a lot of kind of romantic entanglement stuff there. And it's basically it's Zaladane who was at the time had absorbed Polaris's powers, another magnetic character who was thought to be or is, depending on the
his daughter,
depending on who's writing the fucking thing, she's his daughter or she's not his daughter. I don't particularly care anymore. But she's absorbed those powers and now she's trying to absorb Magneto's powers as well. And again, wonderful, illustrated by Jim Lee, written by Chris Claremont, classic X-Men, great stuff. But also in the Age of Apocalypse, they have a child together. Because Magneto can negate her powers and they can be romantically linked. And again, Charles isn't around at that point either. And then I mentioned Joseph as well, who is implied to be at one point, he turns out to be a clone of Magneto, a younger clone. Within that time, they think it might be an amnesiac Magneto who's somehow younger. And they have a little romantic connection. And again, gets in Gambit's goat. He's like, Magneto should die. I want to be with Rogue, which we kind of get. So I really like that, and I think you know it's implied that they have sex in the show. I'd say in that scene, you know, it's you know she's you know a very vulnerable person. She wants what she wants, you know, for better or worse. Magneto's the guy that can give it to her, and that's what she wants.
He's the only man alive who can give her what she needs, I guess. So yeah. In a hospital bed. I suppose people are shocked because obviously, if you haven't got the comic knowledge to fall back on to know there is that story, I suppose in all the preceding seasons, there was no hint of any
of anything. Previous knowledge.
It's literally a case of they're alone in the Charles's old study together, and all of a sudden they're like getting intimate with each other. And you're like, where's, if you don't know, you're going, where's that come from? It's not, it was never signposted up literally until that moment. It seemed to literally fall out of the sky.
But I like that.
So I suppose people like that would be a bit shocked. I guess it's a big age gap as well.
Sure. But I like that it went certain places I didn't expect it to. Again, it was shocking, surprising. And I was like, and the drama, the sense of drama, the soap opera is what I love about the X-Men as well. That Marvel method that Stan Lee and everyone used to write to and draw to, you know, that I think it's well and truly here in all the kind of storylines that are going on. And they weave in and out between them. There's kind of wonderful little character moments and some other stuff going on, which I think, again, is superbly handled, written. Again, I'm not like begging for an action sequence. I'm like, no, I want these moments. These are the ones where I'm like, oh, yeah, I love this shit. You know, it's brilliant.
That's what we want. That you want amidst the comic book spectacle, you want those human moments, don't you? You want those, you know, when you break it down, they're mutants with these wonderful powers, but they're people. We want to see them with going through the same minutiae of life that you and I go through, you know, things that you struggle with in life, your relationships and things like this. So give it to us, you know, don't just make it like Crash Bang Wallop, you know, Lycra clad SmackDown every week. You've got to have these more slower, more intimate beats, just to then, when you do want to go big, it makes it bigger because you're having smaller moments as well. And that's the versatility of it. That's what we want.
Yeah. It's kind of you've got the big, you know, operatic moments, but again, Magneto talks about this, the refrain as well. I think the speech he gives, all of the speeches he gives in this, I think are fucking great personally. I think, and again, I love that he's criticizing Charles while kind of, and the X-Men as well. Like they say, he goes, I've sent the Morlocks off to Genosha for safety with Charles's money. Why didn't he do that? Why didn't he think to do that? And he, you know, he starts talking about how even Charles Xavier can be wrong. Scott is in pieces because he's like, didn't he trust me with his dream to carry on his dream? You know, why would he do this? And Beast is quoting Mark Twain. He says the best way to destroy your enemy is to make him your friend, which is interesting. I did have one bone of contention, which was, you know, Storm's like, you're our deadliest enemy, you know, and how can we now accept you into our ranks? And really, I'll be honest, with the show, they were always kind of mates with Magneto, apart from those like first two episodes he was in. Like
He did save Charles at the end, ultimately, you know?
Yeah, yeah, and he does. And again, like in the Savage Land in the second season, they're teaming up. Asteroid M, he wasn't really the villain in that. You know, Beyond Good and Evil, he was working for Apocalypse, but it was, you know, he's undercover to stop Apocalypse. I wouldn't say he was their fiercest enemy. I would say it was probably Apocalypse or Mr. Sinister more so, because they were like out and out proper evil and mad. I think, you know, maybe even the Sentinels to a degree. But yeah, for me, I was like, when they were like, oh, it's our deadliest foe, I was like, no, they've kind of been on fairly good, you know, they have fought and they have had moments, but I wouldn't say he was never like out and out evil like he was in maybe X-Men Evolution. They really like they kind of leaned heavily into like he's just a villain, he's a bad guy, more so than the kind of, you know, again, there was still that kind of conversation always with Magneto and the kind of things he's discussing is what his character represents. But yeah, I was kind of like, fiercest enemy, maybe not.
No, I don't think so either.
That's
the beauty of the character, isn't it?
One of my minor niggles that I have with it.
Yeah, that's Magneto, isn't it? He straddles that line anyway, doesn't he? You know, he's done some terrible things that are beyond reprehensible, but it's always rooted in an ideal that you can kind of see where he's coming from based on what he suffered through as a child and what he's had to go through to get to the point he is. Although you can't condone a lot of things he does, you can always kind of understand the place that it's coming from. So yeah, I like the fact that they have Magneto in there as the new sort of head of the school. I think it really works. Yeah. You know, I don't think it's a long term thing. I think that's not going to last. Again, it's all speculation, and I think maybe we'll learn Charles's motivation for leaving it all to him anyway. I know he's his old friend and that, but you would think Charles wouldn't. I don't know. Would Charles actually leave it to him, knowing how precious it was? It's his life. Charles's life's work, isn't it? He literally dedicated his life, his fortune into it. So would he give that to Eric, knowing the potential risk involved that could potentially anyway completely destroy his legacy? So I don't know. I think we're going to see some twists where that's concerned.
Absolutely. I do love when Valerie Cooper turns up and they're like, and Scott's like, he was like, get ready, my X-Men. And Scott's like, we don't come out, you know, guns blazing when the good guys come. And he's like, and then they all come out with these rifles, the UN troops. And he's like, think again. And they're like, well, don't worry about us. Our guns are resistant to your magnetism. And he just goes like, okay. and then gets all the helicopters, controls them, and starts like doing, having the rotor blades like inches from their face. And I was like, that's a fucking like baller move right there. Just like proper, like, here's my big dick and I'm swinging it, you know, right. But it's a rotor from a helicopter. And I love that she doesn't move. She like, she, you know, stands her ground and is like, I'm here to take you in. And
yeah. And again, he goes willingly as well.
Yeah, accepts because he thinks he can. Again, he's like, if it is a fair trial, am I all right to, you know, fight my point, argue my corner? And yeah, they're like, yeah, of course. And because of this, the Friends of Humanity, again, set up in the first episode, return, but the head with the scarring on the face comes back as the executioner with some very specific weaponry that we'll talk about in a little while as well. And also, what my favorite sequence of the whole episode, again, I honestly, is Wolverine, like a midwife, I'm going to call it Wolverine midwife.
Oh yeah.
And he's like, and they're like, he's here. And he's like, who's here? Apocalypse. And he's like, no, the baby. And he's like, oh shit. And that's the one thing he's really panicked about and really scared of, so much so he can't drive in a Jeep and he's almost running people over, like, get out the way.
Yeah.
And Jean's like crushing the Jeep to like take out the pain and aggression on that instead, and moving people, slamming people out of the way. And like that's where almost where the real drama is, even though like the drama at the UN is still palpable, it's down to Storm and Magneto. But the speech he gives, and when he said, like, it's really powerful stuff, like really topical, powerful stuff. When he said the oppressed become the oppressors, again, I don't want to get too political, but in the times we're living in right now, I think that is quite a powerful line, you know, and I don't think they maybe even intended it, because they didn't even know, you know, when they were making this, that this, the situation, you know, in, you know, the Middle East, it would be erupting as it is now. But I think it's even more powerful and effective because of that line. That's what, you know, kind of, I was like, wow, that really hits home. And Dan was sitting here watching me, and he was like, yeah, they're not shying away from any of the politics of this. And I was like, fuck no. And I'm like, no, bring me more of this. That was my main concern, was that they weren't going to steer into the politics, but they really are, on the prejudice angle. And I'm so glad they are, because it makes it so much better. It makes the show so much more powerful and so much more meaningful than just kind of a slapdash cartoon that it could have well been. And it would have been entertaining, I'm sure, but it wouldn't have as much power, and it wouldn't mean as much to so many people. And that's that whole sequence. And again, I like that the executioner, when he's like talking about all the whiny people, I was like, oh god, that I've heard that speech and I hate that. It's like, you know, all those people that they're like, oh, this is woke, X-Men is woke. He's one of them, and I despised him. I love the design. I love the idea behind it. Even though I like despise what the actual character is and who that character is. It's really interesting.
It is, yeah. He's very again, I don't want to talk too much political, but he is very much representing the far right, isn't he?
Yeah,
You know, it is, especially, again, he seems to symbolize the American far right over the last few years with his attitude towards mutant kind and his actions as well, the actions of him and his followers. It, you know, I was watching it thinking, Christ, that's very much like the storming of the Capitol building. This, when they attack the hearing, and they're literally just going in, you know,
Marga and all.
They're not just going for Magneto. They're going, you know, they're going through the security as well. They take, you know, anyone who stands in their way. I was just watching it and thinking, Christ, that is really like holding a mirror up to that, you know. Those events. Again, like you say, though, that's what, you know, that's what we expect from this kind of material. Yeah. So don't shy away from it, you know, as long as you do it in a way that's tasteful. You do it in a way that's not gonna alienate younger viewers, because, you know, this is a show that kids want to watch as well. Then I think they should hold a mirror up to the ills of this world, and, you know, what needs fixing in this broken world we're living in right now. So I really do applaud the showrunners and the writers and the director for doing this and putting it in there. You know, wonderful. This is the perfect platform for it.
And I laughed at this, at the line as well, where they go, you know, they're like, oh, they must be here for Magneto. And the guards are like, no, they're here for you as well. The judges on the kind of panel or committee or whatever you call it. And they're like, what did we do? Why are we hated against? And they were like, and Magneto goes, you gave a monster a trial. You gave a monster a chance to defend himself. And it made me laugh. I was like, yeah. Fucking yeah, you did. And they will see it as such. They would view it as such. They were like, how could you let this thing, as they would describe him, live, let alone give him a trial or a chance to go free? You know, he's done all this stuff, done all this horrible shit. You know, how could you do that? And then they're in jeopardy, and then they're on the back foot as well. And then... Yeah. We get some really cool action sequences, and that I love that the baby takes priority a little bit, even though we're having this huge battle at the UN. Jean and her baby takes priority.
I've highlighted that was so well done. Whilst you see the labor and the baby being born at the exact same time that Magneto gives this brilliant speech, where he kind of takes the panel and flies up into like low orbit almost. He's literally on the edge of Earth's atmosphere, isn't he, with them that high up, and he gives this wonderful speech, and the sort of the line I took from it was where he says if you're gonna allow me to be what you want me to be, and he comes out with a line, he says, don't make me let you down, like it's like if you give me what I need and allow me to be what you want me to be, I will be that, but if you turn in a way that, you know, doesn't suit my kind, I will let you down. You know, I will be that monster again. And at the same time as this baby's been born. So it's like, I don't know, it's showing like the symbolism of, you know, new life and hope for the future. Whilst this, you know, at times monstrous villain is giving this speech about how he can change as well. Providing you give him a chance. It's a really well put together sequence. Really powerful stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, really good. Just wonderful. And again, we get to the hospital, and I love that the doctor refuses to operate or to assist in a mutant birth. And they're like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "Well, if she loses control of her powers, we could die. If she has a C-section, and we have to." And he's like, "Wolverine goes, I'll show you a C-section, bub," which I thought was fucking brilliant. Just all of this, and this humor plays so well, even though we have these kind of high stakes and drama. The kind of these little kind of touching, kind of funny little moments. And again, like Rogue has to absorb the doctor's, you know, memory and expertise to deliver the baby. She does say about, what if I touch the baby and what if this happens? And Jean's like, I trust you. But I was like, just put gloves on.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, you've got wearing gloves anyway.
Just put gloves on. It's fine. They literally have latex gloves. They have scrubs and everything. They're right there, Rogue. You don't need to do it with your bare hands, and nobody would want you to do it with your bare hands. but again, it's got, again, little niggles that I have with it. But again, overall loved it. But yeah, that moment where he's literally, because he goes like, never again. And I love that line as well. Like, again, all of Magneto's dialogue in this is just fantastic. But that moment where he kind of makes the sword of Damocles, you know, several kind of sword of Damocles.
Yes.
Damocli, whatever you want to call it. But, and then that line I loved. It was like, be animals and be caged. You know, there's almost like he hesitates almost and says, you know, be put down. You know, he would have said be put down, but now he says be caged because he's better. Yeah. He's trying to be better. And then he goes and again, he gives that wonderful speech. And then there's that line where he's, what was it? I've forgotten now, but yeah, there was just all of Magneto's dialogue, just put it on your fridge. It's brilliant. All of it. And I love the just, because they're on the back foot, he could have executed them. He could have killed them. He could have left them in space.
Oh, it would. I think pre-Charles' death, he would have done, wouldn't he?
Yeah. 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 And that line
where... And then, of course, Storm.
Yes. So there is a weaponry that the executioner comes in with that they don't recognize, they can't get a reading on. and it's charging up, and Storm sacrifices herself and pushes it's targeted at Magneto, but she pushes Storm out of the way. Storm pushes Magneto out of the way and takes the blast. And then we realize that it is a rifle that is meant to strip mutants of their powers permanently.
Mm.
Which again is going into a kind of storyline again from Chris Claremont in the 80s and stuff. I'll talk about that in a little while, but we have that. And she talked earlier in the episode about how much she loves her mutant powers, and there's this very, and again, that discussion is very interesting, because Jean's like, I don't want my child born a mutant. Now, earlier in the series, and I think it's the first episode, or no, it's the final episode of the first series, Scott and Jean talk about having kids, and Jean's worried that the children will have the same struggles and problems and issues that they had. And Scott goes, well, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Mm.
So her mind is set. So her mind is like, yep, we have to, it has to be like that. So what's really interesting here is she's flipped. And again, this is very telling for the end of the episode as well, that she's like, I want my son to be born normal, a human, so to speak. And Storm acknowledges that and goes, yeah, that's fair. You know, I can, it's a lovely daydream to have, like it's never going to happen. But it brought me here. It brought me to my people. It brought me to Xavier and everybody I love, yeah, and you, my best friend. Like she's, you know, she's so, she loves her powers, and they're a blessing, very much a blessing to her, even though she has to kind of maintain and manage her emotions and various other things. They're very much like something she enjoys and revels in, more so than most of the X-Men, I'd say. And yeah, so it's interesting that they have that discussion. I think it's a wonderful discussion and holds a lot of power as well. But it was interesting to see where she'd flipped. And then we because of this kind of almost Magneto almost kills the Senate, let's call them, what have you, the UN Senate or whatever, Charter of the UN, whatever they're called.
Mm.
He brings them down. He brings back the Executioner, where, you know, he could have killed him, but he said that was it. That was the line I forgot. Look, the X-Men have always done their best to protect a world that fears and hates them. And look what they get. Look what the just deserves is. They are stripped of who they are. They are turned into you. And at the end of the episode, Jean is struggling to figure it out and try and get her powers back. Beast can't do it. And she feels like she has to leave. And this is a very tearful letter that she leaves. And she's off and going off and doing her thing. And then right at the end of the episode, which is probably the most interesting bit, arguably, well, cliffhanger anyway, is that Jean comes into the building. It comes back to Charles Xavier, even though Jean is already there with her newborn, Nathan Charles Summers, who is potentially Cable in the future.
Cable.
Yeah.
Mm.
Potentially one of various, again, it could have been any child. It could have been Rachel Summers. It could have been anybody, but it's Nathan Charles Summers. I talked about old Cable's names last week, so they've added another one to the fucking list. But yeah, so that's interesting as well. So yeah, what did you think to that little twist at the end?
Well, I mean, there's all sorts of, like, we talked about it off air, didn't we, where, you know, there's all kinds of theories about who she is or what she is, and is this the real Jean that's just turned up at the door now, and the Jean that's been living amongst them and literally just given birth to Scott's baby isn't the real Jean. It could be the clone Jean, the Maddie Pryor Jean. We don't know. I mean, it's purely speculation. Maybe the one who's just turned up at the door isn't the real Jean. One of them is and one of them isn't, ultimately. So, you know, which way around is it? There's one of two ways you can go. You know, before we discuss that, I also think as well, Storm's departure, there's no way that depowering will be a permanent arrangement.
No.
Because you don't take a character like Storm in your first two episodes and what Storm means to so many people on a cultural level and a representational level. And, you know, like we were saying before about, you know, what a grandiose Omega level mutant she is. There's no way you would permanently take her powers away and sideline her like that at all. I think it's fair to say at some point that situation will be remedied and she'll be back to what she was. I think anyone who thinks that's going to stay like that forever, I think is dreaming. But back to Jean. Sorry, go on.
No, I was gonna say it did happen in the comics. She was depowered. Yeah. And there's a title later on down the line of an episode which I think is gonna be a Storm-centric episode or a couple of Storm-centric episodes. But we'll get into that, I think, close to the time. But yeah, it is a big thing. And it became like and it was a long time. It wasn't like a couple of issues. It was like years where she was depowered, but arguably at her strongest as a character as well. Mm. Like, you know, so there's a storyline where Maddie has the baby and people are questioning whether Scott should leave the team after becoming a father, and she challenges him to a duel. And if she wins, she becomes the de facto leader of the X-Men. And she wins, and he goes off and has a baby and like raises his child. So I don't know if maybe we'll see that or some other elements of that. She's already rocking the punk hairdo. So I don't know if she'll have the leather jacket and stuff. But yeah, it's definitely, they're pulling a lot from some real classic storylines at the moment. So, which I'm loving, because I'm like, I read that. I know that. I know the reference. I know what you're doing. This could be Maddie Pryor. This could be maybe it's a shapeshifter. We've got Morph there. Maybe it's Mystique. Maybe it's a new Sentinel. You know, it could be anything. It could be who knows? It'll be interesting to see. I think I know where we're going, but again, it's purely speculation because I don't know. You know, I've read the comics, so I kind of have an inkling, but it's never they're never explicitly doing word for word, shot for shot, the comic. Again, even this episode, which is highly based on X-Men 200, is still not the same. You know, still not the same thing. There's a lot of differences because there has to be. I think it's a really interesting. It's a really interesting teaser to see what we've got coming.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, you know, again, no spoilers for those who haven't been made aware of it, but certain reveals and toy lines would perhaps show who. Mm-hmm. This Jean is, or who the other Jean is. So, you know, I think the clues are there, but I'll let the viewers and listeners come to their own conclusions, really, because again, it's pure speculation, isn't it? We don't know. We're all going to wait till next week anyway to see what happens next. Yeah. It may sort of play out over several weeks anyway, but what a great sort of place to leave your second episode, isn't it? I mean, that is one hell of a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
You know, we thought the first episode had a great cliffhanger with Eric turning up and saying, I know, own the school. I'm the headmaster. But an interesting enough, it was one slightly side, I thought, where the hell are all the students in the school? Because you don't actually see any of them in these episodes, if you notice. Yeah. Like, they're outside playing the basketball, but it's literally just your principal characters who were there in the team playing the basketball. I didn't see any students. Is it school holidays or what's going on?
Well, in the original show, I think it was just them. That was the school. I think it was more like a training ground and less of an actual school, like in the films.
Yeah.
Because obviously you had like Kitty Pryde running around and other characters and Pyro and all sorts. But I think for them, it's more like it's an underground outlaw training facility, less of like they're doing maths and English and science and social studies. You know, it's like we're training to, you know, we can do that, and that's probably part and parcel, definitely for Jubilee. But I think most of them, they're not teenagers, majority of them, and that's originally what they were teenagers. But again, these are like, you know, Wolverine's hundreds of years old, you know, Gambit's an adult, Beast's an adult, Cyclops, Jean, you know, they're all adults. And I think that's when they do the kind of X-Men evolution. They were like, well, let's put them in a real high school and see how they deal with prejudice there and not have their mansion as a school, but more of a training facility and training ground. I'm not bothered that there's no, because they were never in the show. They were never like random mutants just running around like it was an active school. It was more like a headquarters or a hideout. Even when the school gets bulldozed by the Juggernaut, it's not like a big deal because they just live underground anyway. So it's like, Nobody questioned that.
I suppose. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, I suppose I'm thinking too much about it.
Yeah, really, it's not a fully functional school, really. I think they called it like an institute anyway. So it's not, I guess, that's, I don't know if an institute is an institute a school, or can you describe it as such? I don't know.
You're right, actually. Yeah, it's referred to as an institute. Yeah, you're fully right. Yeah, I guess I've just missed the mark there. I don't know. I was expecting to see, I don't know, more in there, but you know, maybe as the series goes on, they might expand that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Integrates himself with the team and what have you. Maybe more will follow. That'll be the catalyst.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, well, that this is an interesting thing as well, because Genosha is now becoming a member, you know, a member of the UN, which again is. Again, it's like Magneto has been very effective in a very short amount of time.
He's got a lot done, hasn't he?
Yeah, and I think that's what Scott respects about him, that he's, you know, he's like, I never thought I'd see the day, and we've done it. We've you know, and he again, this kind of, I'm going to keep an eye on you, but, you know, I think you seem to be okay now, or on the even keel. So yeah, very, very interested to see what comes next. I'm kind of a little disappointed we've only got one episode next week. I'm like, shit, I'm going to have to like wait weeks. But again, that's kind of the fun as well. We can kind of read up on stuff and wait for those characters we mentioned to come back and things. But yeah, is there before we finish, is there any kind of speculative stuff? Again, we've probably talked about it a little bit, some of the stuff.
Yeah. I think we have, really. I think based on what we've been given in these first two episodes, I think we've covered everything about where it might go or who we might see. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff still to come. I mean, you know, who the overall villain is, you know, it would point towards a certain sinister character. Yes. But again, that's all speculation. I think that's going to happen. But then, you know, who are we going to get returning, who we've seen before? You know, could we possibly get characters that were in the original series, key characters, but would dip in and out, like Colossus or Nightcrawler or someone like that, Iceman perhaps. I really hope we do.
Yeah, they did say there's going to be cameos, so I don't know if that means maybe Spider-Man, maybe, because he's in the same universe, or, you know, all those other characters and animated shows crossing over. I mean, they have kind of the most in common and the most kind of history, I'd say, of most characters. But yeah, I would be
interested to see that. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd be up for that. Maybe they can finally find out where fucking Mary Jane went at the end of that show. Because that's what, if they do Spider-Man 98, I believe it would be called. That's the first question you're going to have to answer, is where the hell is Mary Jane all this time? What's she been doing? You know, that would be number one on the bullet list. But I've got a really big reach now. I'm gonna go real far out. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had Gyrick say tolerance is extinction. Okay. And we've got the last episode, last three parter is called Tolerance is Extinction. Yeah. Now, the fact that the Morlocks have been moved to Genosha is an indicator that I think we're going to see the opposite side of tolerance's extinction. I think we're going to see it from the Magneto perspective. I think something very, very bad is going to happen. Potentially, I don't know if they would go this far as making it a mutant massacre, which happened to the Morlocks and happened in Genosha as well in Grant Morrison's comics. You know, huge kind of massacres going on there because of, you know, mutant hatred and stuff. And if not that, I think maybe there's going to be a mass depowering with this weaponry that we've seen, which is based on the collars what was his name in the show? The scientist, the Einstein-like character, Adler. Who was dead anyway, and that radiation,
Muir Island,
that whole storyline, and Mystique was in impersonating him for a while, so I'm thinking there's some that I think that's going to be, because I think it's going to have to take some monument. I think it's going to happen. I think Magneto is going to turn back, but I think it's got to be something monumentally bad for him to go, right, you guys, this is fucked, you guys are fucked, game over.
I agree, because of where we see him now, where he's moved you know, more on the, he's showing a better path, like you said. I think for him to forsake that and go dark again,
and
it's going to be big.
Yeah, here's another thing, because he promised Leech that he would like never have to worry again or never have to fear again. Mm. And the main thing that caused Magneto, I said it in the previous episode, to turn from a heel to a babyface, using some wrestling terminology, was that he harmed Kitty Pryde. He hurt a child. So I wonder if him saying, you're safe, no one's going to harm you, and that child dies or is, you know, cured or something happens to him, is injured, or something along those lines, is the thing that makes him snap and go back into his old ways, maybe. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be something, isn't it? I mean, it could even be like a nuclear strike on Genosha or something that. You wouldn't rule that out.
I mean, in Grant Morrison's X-Men, Cassandra Nova gets like a relative of Trask and gets him to activate a new set of Sentinels, and they massacre Genosha. Magneto disappears for a long time as well, but it's also implied that it's not Magneto. It's a whole fucking thing. But yeah, there's something there as well, I think, potentially. But again, purely speculation. I have no idea. I have no inkling of what those episodes are about. I have no idea where it's going to go. It's only because of these first few episodes I'm putting some jigsaw pieces together. Maybe. I could be totally wrong. I could be way, way off. But it's purely speculation.
Yeah. Well, that's half the fun, isn't it? That's half the fun. I'm glad they've not done like you might have expected, you know, to release all the episodes at once. Yeah. I'm glad it's weekly episodic because it creates this discussion. It creates the fun. I'm glad they've been really quite ambiguous with some of the episode titles. I mean, we're not going to talk about it now, but even with the brief synopsis they've put out for each episode, it's still pretty vague, level, isn't it? They're really keeping the cards close to the chest. So I really like that. In an age where everyone seems to know everything before it happens anyway, I'm really glad that we don't know where they're going with it, and we got to wait a week to see, and another week, and then another week, and so on and so forth. I think it's great. It's a real kind of, it's a real throwback, isn't it, to how things used to be, episodic weekly television. Yeah.
I think it's genuinely one of the best kind of, I'll call it a reboot. We'll call it a reboot, just for lack of a better word, that not only acknowledges and appreciates and respects what's come before, but also gives us something new. And even in some cases, makes vast improvements in some respects, you know. Again, not that the X-Men cartoon was bad in any way, but again, technology's come on. They've got a lot more money behind it now. Marvel was in the midst of bankruptcy, as we talked about in the previous episode.
Yeah.
You know, they have advantage, and they have the world's eyes are watching what the X-Men do next, and I'm here for it. I've not been this excited for something for some time in regards to comic books or movies and stuff. I'm absolutely buzzed to have this back and to have it be as good as I remember, or again, even better in some respects. I really hope people, If they're jumping on now, I hope they go back and appreciate those earlier episodes. Again, not everything, it's not going to be quite the same, and it never will be. And, you know, we talked about how the voices have changed and they're not quite the same as they were. Again, I forgive it. Again, there's a reason, like Valerie Cooper, I can definitely tell why they recast her voice as Jean. Absolutely, my voice was different from 2 years ago, 5 years ago, let alone 30 years, almost 30 years ago. You know,
exactly. Yeah.
Voices
exactly.
Change.
I think the voice cast works. I think the changes they've made do hit. And I think the ones who've retained the roles can still pull it off just about to sound how they did. So you don't really listen to it and go, Christ, that doesn't sound like it should. I think it all hits, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think Ray Chase is the new guy playing Cyclops. I think he is superb. I think he is spot on, gets the character, gets the fun, gets the serious nature, gets everything about it. And again, I think the writing, the animation, the music, all of it just comes together in such a great way. You know, Lenore Zahn is back as Rogue. wonderful, playful, fun, charming, yet with that tragic kind of backstory, and you know, just it's all wonderful. I think all the cast is great, I'll be honest. I don't think there's a bad I don't think there's a weak link in the cast at all. I think the animation takes a bit of getting used to, a little bit. If you're, you know, I've been rewatching the old show, so it still is wonderful animation. Don't get me wrong, but and it has to. There are allowances you need to make, and there are changes that had to be made. But for me, I just feel like I'm back watching, sat on the floor Saturday morning at the Haven Holiday Park every morning on summer holiday, watching another banger of an episode day in, day out. Again, another cliffhanger. It's wonderful. It's really lit a fire under me. Like I'm passionate about it. I went into work and I was like, happy X-Men day. I went in with an X-Men t-shirt on, my X-Men baseball cap on. I was like, again, nobody gave a fuck, but I did. I cared because I wanted to feel like that. And I was rushing home and I was like sending gifts on the chats and everything. Again, nobody else cares. And they're like, what are you talking about, you weirdo? And I was like, you don't know. You don't get it. You don't understand. Yeah. But me and Max do, and Dave does, and everybody else who watched the show does. I did want to mention just before we didn't mention this up top, we probably should have done. Merry Mutant Math isn't with us this week when he was supposed to be. He couldn't make it, unfortunately. So we didn't want to kind of scramble to find another guest. We're not really doing that this time round. I'm not gonna try and like schedule things. Me and Max have got a set time. We're going to ask if someone can come. If that person can't come, we're just going to do it by ourselves. That's kind of our rule. I don't want to have, I've got enough podcast bullshit on at the moment. As much as I love it, I've got far too much on my plate to be fucking about with anything else. So we'll ask people. So sadly, Math couldn't join us. We do miss you, Math, but we've had a good time anyway. Yeah. I hope you've enjoyed the show. And, you know, hopefully, you know, whoever else is going to come on, hopefully we're going to have Rhea next week, but she's currently the jury at the trial of Magneto herself. So she's doing jury service. So she might not be able to join us. But hopefully it's not quite as dangerous as the one in the show, but fingers crossed she can join us. If not, again, just be me and Max, which again is fine with me. Before we go though, is there anything else you'd like to say before I read out some listener comments?
Just to say what we've said, I just think it's great to be back. I think it's like, it's equivalent of a beloved old classic car being restored and being given a fresh coat of paint, isn't it?
Yes.
I think they've just hit all the marks.
Wonderful metaphor that.
It is, isn't it? But I think, you know, potentially when you're doing this, it could have failed, it could have fallen flat on its face and died on its ass. But I think the reaction speaks for itself. We've not seen or heard anyone say anything about these episodes other than like how much they loved it. I think it satisfies old fans. It'll work for new fans. I think it's something people of all ages can enjoy. It doesn't matter how young you are or how old you are, you can watch this and be safe with it. And I think it's really encouraging, and the fact that a second season's in development and plans for a third season are afoot is great too. It shows the faith Marvel have got in it, and it shows that we can get some long-term storytelling as well.
Yes.
You know, this season doesn't have to have a beginning, middle and end. Things can be left loose dangling at the end of this season, which we might not get to know about how that works out till next year when season two hits. So, you know, they can really, you know, plan some long-term arcs here that could take 3 or 4 years to resolve. And I'm here for it. Bring it on, I say.
Well, that's another quite a few podcasts in our future then, Max, I guess.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, no. We'll be dead like Xavier before we finish all these.
That's true.
But I wanted to include a couple of things in the show notes this week. I've decided to include all the kind of Instagram accounts for all the actors and some of the behind the scenes people. So I'm going to include those if you want to follow them or, you know, comment or, you know, share them. Enjoy that. But I'm also going to include an Amazon link for The Trial of Magneto, the comic book. You can buy it yourself and see how it compares to this episode, this Mutant Liberation Begins episode. But before we go, just some listener comments from Instagram. So Sarah Coyne, who was on my Candyman podcast, if you're following Spider-Down and the Secret Wars, she says, a very strong start. feels like it's matured with its audience without losing the charm of fun. And she says, also, stupid, sexy Magneto. A lot of his lines were fire.
Mm. She's speaking the truth there. I can't argue with any of that.
Can't argue with a stupid, sexy Magneto. I can't argue with that. Chris Bell Comics, he says, the second one was great. The first one wasn't anything special for me.
I think I can understand where he's coming. I don't agree with him, but I understand where people would think that because the first is so chock full of bombast and spectacle and just is just up all the time, whereas the second one is a bit more reflective.
Hmm. Character-driven.
No. Exactly, yeah. So I can understand that, you know. But I think the two stand side by side in terms of quality.
I think the first episode is a good representation of that entire show and what it meant to people and what it was trying to say, the allegories, the characters, the action. Mm-hmm. Again, going back to those original villains, those original human villains, again, just to highlight the struggle and the plight of the X-Men, I think it was important and it was a touchstone. And again, you know, there's a few kind of continuity errors and things that I picked up on. Again, very minor niggles, but I won't mention them now because we've gone past that and I don't really want to shit on it in any further way than I already have, because again, I've not shat on it. I've just gone bits here and there. If you want to ask me, you know, message me, I'll tell you the continuity errors and stuff. Again, I don't particularly care. I'm not that, you know, I've noticed them because I know the show quite well, I know the comics quite well. That's it. It's just because I'm a fucking egghead when it comes to X-Men. So yeah. And
I am that.
You too, Max. You too. Fair play. And the Attention Seeking Geek, who was on my episode podcast again on Spider-Man and the Secret Wars, we did top five underrated X-Men characters. He picked a whole host of very weird and wacky ones. So go and listen to that. The link is in the show notes from the previous episode, previously on X-Men. But yeah, he says, no notes. No notes.
There aren't any, are they really?
Exactly. No problems. Again, like I said, even my minor niggles, I can ignore. But that is it, Max. We've done it again. We are going to be here next week for the next episode. Next time on Examining X-Men 97. Good night, guys, and thank you again for joining us again and continuing Xavier's dream.
Bye. Do 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 do